Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the QB2 Experience podcast. My name is Salvatore Stefanelli, coming to you live from the basement of my parents' house, where I've actually been recording this podcast for about the last month or so, bringing into all your expectations of fantasy football bloggers. On the line with me is my legendary co-host, Jim Sonnes, of Number Fire and FanDuel fame. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm just great. How you doing, Sal?
Honestly, I am extremely tired, and I've just been in this, like, daze for the past month because I've been visiting my parents back home, helping out, doing basically whatever they tell me to do because I'm an only child.
You should clarify that you don't actually, like, full-time live there, you know. Can give yourself some credit for, you know, for all that.
Even if I say that, I'm not sure how many people would believe it, though. That's the other side of the coin. But I know I've been visiting my parents for the past month. They are in the East Coast and I live on the West Coast, and because I'm an only child, I basically have to do whatever they say because I can't pawn off to work on anybody else. So it's like I wake up, I write, and then like yesterday I planted plum trees. Like, that was my day.
Okay.
And then I go and do more research for my other job and rinse and repeat basically for like the past month or so.
It sounds like a wicked ride.
it is a ride of some sort. Whether it's a wicked one,
I'm not quite sure.
Well, I guess wicked could be good or bad.
Yeah, I don't know how they use it. I hear that word a lot. I just don't know the actual like context of what it means. I've just started using it like naturally, I guess. So I could be using it totally wrong. We may never know.
I mean, we'll leave it up to the imagination of the listeners out there, I think. We'll see how they want to use the word wicked. But luckily, this will be over in a week, and I'll go back to my other life, where I basically do the same thing, except plant plum trees. Over there, I have someone else to tell me what to do.
Unless you just enjoyed it so much that you want to do it again.
Oh, no. Winter's coming.
Yeah, winter is coming.
Winter in northwestern Ontario is not fun.
I totally jumped into Game of Thrones mindset when you said winter is coming, because I'm still catching up on that. I'm way behind everything, so I mean, pop culture, I'm out of the loop.
I mean, I can't even spoil it for you because I don't watch the show.
Okay.
I can spoil The Walking Dead season premiere because everybody else was talking about it on Twitter.
Yeah, I've never had a super big urge to watch that. I know it was on sometime related to Breaking Bad, which I watched quite a bit, but I actually watched that today, may or may not have. I've never gotten into that one, I guess. Zombies scare me, which is why I'm a child.
I mean, I used to watch The Walking Dead when it was good, but that was
You're old enough to remember when it was good.
I think that was like 25 years ago. I'm not quite sure how my math is right now. But no, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, I think that's a great segue for fantasy football.
Absolutely.
No, winter is coming. Fantasy football will be over soon, sadly, because as we mentioned earlier, this is the 8th episode for week 8. Oof. Halfway through the season already. It's like,
it's upsetting.
Every year it just creeps up on you and you're just like, where did this come from?
We'll be doing those March MFL 10s in no time.
It's like, you know, it feels like yesterday I was writing up puff pieces to draft Joe Flacco, and now we're like, oh, hey, Josh McCown might be back. Like, that's our high point.
This is what we get excited about in week 8.
Especially in two quarterback leagues.
Right, for sure.
All right, so we'll quickly recap our week 7 hits and misses, as we do each week to start the podcast. So last week we recommended Kirk Cousins, Marcus Mariota, Andy Dalton, Alex Smith as our main streamers of the week. Oh, and Philip Rivers. They all range from QB5 for Kirk Cousins to quarterback 14 was the worst of our main streamers in Philip Rivers, but he still almost scored 15 fantasy points.
Yeah, and with Rivers too, the good thing is that he had 371 yards, so he put up a lot of volume, but just they went to Melvin Gordon every time they got in close, and one of those was a passing touchdown, but just kind of how things shake out sometimes, you know? Sometimes you just don't get the touchdowns where you need them, even if the process behind that play is still right. I still like the process on Rivers, just kind of the touchdowns didn't quite break the right way.
Yeah, like we mentioned over and over, it's a touchdown-dependent game that we played. Melvin Gordon, of all people, had three touchdowns. If you take those two rushing touchdowns, turn them into passing touchdowns, Philip Rivers goes from, 14 fantasy points to 26 fantasy points, and we wouldn't have been surprised by that amount based on the matchup. And then for our rapid-fire streamers, guys, we had Colin Kaepernick, who finishes QB16, 14.12 fantasy points. Buoyed again as always by his rushing yards. What was it, 88 last week?
Yeah, at 84. Yep, he was pretty bad outside of that. That was a really, really atrocious football game. But those rushing yards will help.
So he's basically averaging around 70-ish rushing yards per game in his two starts, and that's the reason why we like Colin Kaepernick in fantasy football.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex Smith had a bounce back game, was a top 10 fantasy quarterback last week, so we can all go back to liking Alex Smith. So that's about the seven of us that do.
Whoa, there are two here. Sample size out of two people, therefore it's 100%. Everyone loves Alex Smith.
I'm going to go with that.
Yeah,
and then we briefly mentioned Landry Jones as a desperation fantasy quarterback. He scored 13.2 fantasy points, which isn't the worst that you could get. He finished as a QB18 for the week, who actually outscored the quarterback we did mention to bench last week, which was Russell Wilson. He scored 8.7 fantasy points, which was his fewest total of the season. Finished as QB22, and he scored the same amount of fantasy points as Ryan Fitzpatrick, who didn't start the game, and scored less than Kevin Hogan, who came absolutely out of nowhere to just run buckshot wild last week.
That was insane. I remember Kevin Hogan from college, because I was a huge – I've mentioned this before, but I was a huge Cody Kessler fan in college. So I would watch some Pac-12 games, but I did not know that Kevin Hogan could do stuff like that. That was just deranged what he did.
I mean, I still can't believe it.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a recap of week 7. Not much else to talk about there, so we'll just move straight on to our week 8 picks. So starting off this week, the QB2 streaming candidates that we like. We'll start off here with Jameson Winston, who just came off a 3-touchdown game himself last week, taking on a defense we like to pick on in fantasy football, which is the Oakland Raiders. This game is in Oakland and currently sports a 49.5 over-under, with Tampa Bay a implied team total of 25.5. So they are currently 1.5-point favorites, which is basically just kind of a pick'em game. And if I mentioned this game was in Oakland before, I do apologize. This game is actually in Tampa Bay. And the win factor is something you're going to want to keep an eye on. The number fire DFS Daily Fantasy Sports Lineup page currently says expected wind speed at 13 miles per hour.
Yeah, and that's a little bit higher than you'd like, but we are still early in the week. Hopefully that'll go down throughout the week, and if it does, Jameis Winston is really in a good spot. You mentioned last week, Sal, that he was able to succeed against a pretty rough defense, and I think that that's reflected in the Vegas totals. It seems as if Vegas realizes that he is capable of having some solid games with that implied team total of 25.5. The Raiders are another really nice opponent for him to attack. They're 28th against the pass, according to Number Fire's metrics. And, I'm not a huge fan of Jameis Winston, the player, so far. He hasn't been very good. He's 25th in overall efficiency based on Number Fire's metrics, but he has been a bit better in success rate. He is 18th there, which kind of says that, maybe that overall ranking is being buoyed down by one legitimately atrocious performance he had against Arizona. That was one of the worst games of this entire season in that one. So that may be influencing him quite a bit. And I think that what that says is that even though he's not the world's most efficient quarterback, he's probably good enough to take advantage of this past defense, even if Blake Bortles couldn't quite do that last week. Still tilting a little bit about the Allen Robinson portion of that one. But, you know, looking at quarterbacks going against Oakland this year, the only ones who have finished worse than QB6 against Oakland so far are Alex Smith, who is playing in the literal remnants of a typhoon. Marcus Mariota, who didn't have his top pass catcher in Delanie Walker that week, and Blake Bortles, who again is legitimately awful. So it seems as if this lines up as if Winston has, you know, like a top five quarterback upside. And I would say his floor is like, you know, QB 15 or so. I think that's probably around his floor. I think that's probably the reasonable range of expectations for him. And at least for me, Sal, in a, you know, a quarterback two type guy, I'll take that every time.
Yeah, no, he has great upside to finish the week as a top five fantasy quarterback this week. Now, you mentioned the quarterbacks who didn't do well against Oakland this year. Then we look at the quarterbacks that have done well. Oakland has allowed four top seven fantasy finishes to the quarterback position this year. Two were the QB2 back-to-back to start off the season. They're allowing the seventh most fantasy points per game at a rate of 19.2. They've allowed three or more touchdowns in three of their seven games, which is nice because we've seen Jameson Winston produce at that level. He has had himself three games where he's thrown three or more passing touchdowns this year. The Raiders have allowed Joe Flacco's only good fantasy game this year when he finished QB6, scoring just roughly over 22 fantasy points. And the Oakland defense has allowed four quarterbacks this year to score 20 or more fantasy points in a game. There's a reason why we like to pick on Oakland, and it's because they do not do a good job of stopping the pass. Like I said, those quarterbacks who have thrown multiple touchdowns include four to Drew Brees, three to Matt Ryan, four to Phillip Rivers. And the only quarterbacks to not throw a touchdown against them were Marcus Mariota and Alex Smith. But we've mentioned, you know, the factors that were against those two quarterbacks this year. And you know, even Blake Bortles threw for a touchdown and almost 250 yards last week against them. Except, you know, he had two interceptions to go with that one. I mean, one thing that's a little scary is, you know, Oakland has picked off a quarterback twice in a game three times this year. And we've seen Jameson Winston this year have a game of four interceptions and another game where he had two. So, I mean, it was against Denver and Arizona. Keep that in mind. But as I just, this week is just shaping up to be one where you can just see Jameson Winston and Mike Evans just go off on that Oakland secondary. Maybe some dump off passes to Jaquizz Rodgers. And there's a reason why this team has an implied team total this high of 25.5.
Absolutely. And that's another thing, too, that does help Winston. You mentioned Mike Evans, but, you know, having that dominant pass catcher, which Mike Evans is, it definitely does help Winston as a fantasy asset. So I think that you have to factor that in. It seems difficult to foresee a scenario in which the Raiders are able to shut down Mike Evans. And if he goes off, Jameis Winston's going to do the same. So I really think this is a solid spot for him.
Nice. So we're in agreement on this one. We'll move on to our next streamer of the week. Someone we mentioned, I think, 752 times
probably
on the podcast this season so far. No, that's our good friend Alex Smith. You know, it goes by Alex to some. This game currently has a 50-point over-under, I believe. Let me check out the lineup page here. Yep, still at 50. They have a high team total again this week, 26.25. And they are 2.5-point road underdogs against the Indianapolis Colts. This game has a retractable roof, but wind chill. There goes my Canadian in me, wind chill. Wind speeds are currently at three miles per hour, so we don't really have to worry about that either way. So, yeah, we know we like to recommend Alex Smith a lot. We like to recommend quarterbacks going up against the Indianapolis Colts. So why don't you start this one off for us, Jim?
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised at the spread here. With the Chiefs being 2.5-point favorites, I would have expected it to be potentially Indy being favored. But, you know, I guess what that's trying to say is that I don't see a scenario in which the Chiefs are able to just run the football. And that's what saps fantasy value away from Alex Smith. it doesn't seem as if this is a team they'll be able to do this against. So I think that he should have plenty of volume. The implied team total is great at 26.25. And if we're looking at Alex Smith home versus road using the RotoViz game splits app, he averages more yards and fewer interceptions per game when he's on the road than when he's at home. Now, his fantasy scoring has been about even. He is slightly lower on the road based on that RotoViz game splits app. But a lot of that comes down to touchdowns, which could be fluky, and it could be fluky in the positive sense against Indy with that implied team total as high as it is. And, you know, the worry about Indy is that, well, maybe their efficiency rankings are way down based on the time that Vontae Davis missed. Well, right now they're 31st against the pass, and they were 28th against the pass when Vontae Davis came back from his injury. So even though he is back and he is one of the best corners in all of football, he hasn't really had a huge effect on that secondary as a whole, and that's huge for Alex Smith and for the entire Chiefs passing game. And if you look at the past four quarterbacks to face the Colts, two have been in the top five in weekly scoring, and the only non-top 12 finisher is Brock Osweiler, who, as we've seen, not exactly the best measuring stick for fantasy performances. So I think that looking at this matchup for Alex Smith, it's kind of, to me at least, and I know that he is favored, but I think it's one of those situations where I think the volume should be higher, and to me that makes him a really, really nice play.
I mean, it seems like every week we talk about how we're surprised by the Vegas lines when it involves the Kansas City Chiefs and Alex Smith. It's been kind of interesting to just see how the results have been. And with him, you just hope that, you know, rushing touchdowns are passing touchdowns, because that's what boosts his fantasy totals usually. When you start Alex Smith, you're just hoping that he's able to throw like one or two touchdowns rather than the Chiefs running it in from the goal line or backwards pass to Dontarico, because that's also something else we have to tilt about.
Right.
But no, the Colts this year, they've allowed three quarterbacks to finish as a top five fantasy quarterback for the week. They allowed another QB13 finish, so four out of seven games where a quarterback has finished QB13. We had another one was QB16. That was the Brock Osweiler week, which, that one basically went from like QB30 to QB16 in the fourth quarter from that comeback. Indy is allowing the eighth most fantasy points quarterbacks this year at a rate of 18.8. They've allowed two or more passing touchdowns in five of their seven games. Those quarterbacks are Matthew Stafford, Blake Bortles, Brian Hoyer, the aforementioned Brock Osweiler, and Marcus Mariota. Kind of depends on how you view those quarterbacks in terms of talent, but they're not all world beaters. The only quarterbacks to not throw a touchdown against this defense this year were Trevor Siemian and Philip Rivers. Alex has thrown two touchdowns in half of his games, three out of six. One thing we've always liked about Alex Smith, which hasn't happened a whole lot this year, was being able to get fantasy points on the ground. His high this year is only 15 yards, and he has only one rushing touchdown. But Indy has allowed Blake Bortles to run for 36 yards and a score on the ground in his game. Marcus Mariota ran for 14 yards. So even if you can add like 15 yards, it's still one and a half fantasy points added to your total. Indianapolis really can't stop the pass. They are allowing a completion percentage of 67.7 to opposing passers this year. And the other crazy side of that is Alex's completion percentage this year, 67.8.
So of course.
That's kind of eerie with Halloween coming up. But no, we mentioned throughout this segment is we like the game flow potential for this one. We like the implied team total, because you can see it either or where Alex Smith and the Chiefs get out to a big lead, where because they're implied to score almost four touchdowns. Like last week, they were implied to score four touchdowns. But you can also see it where this game gets out of hand with Andrew Luck throwing a lot and the Colts getting out to a lead and the Chiefs having to come back with the pass. Like, I can actually see this game going back and forth either way. And I believe Indy has a pretty close team total. Yeah, they have 23.75, so it's not that big of a spread in this one. So I think for fantasy purposes, this is a good one for both sides of the coin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, especially with Dante Moncrief coming back. You know, I know that that's mostly going to help the Colts, but if it, hey, if it helps put Alex Smith in negative game flow, I'll take whatever I can get. You know, I'm not going to complain how it gets there. I just want that dude chucking the football.
You know, and according to The Ringer, Matthew Stafford is the leading MVP candidate this year because his game is now comparable to Alex Smith. So if you do the math, Matthew Stafford is MVP because he plays like Alex Smith. That must mean Alex Smith is the MVP.
Transitive property, absolutely.
Exactly. And if he's the MVP in real world, I mean, it could transfer down to fantasy football. I don't know if this actually makes any sense, but in Alex land, it does.
That is the most sound logic I've heard, and I will not argue a single aspect of it.
All right, exactly. Before the logic police come running down my door, let's move on to the next streamers that we like this week. So this one, we're going to go look at both sides of this particular game. It is the London game with Washington and Cincinnati playing each other. Sunday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern at Wembley. We have a game that has a over-under 47. Cincinnati is favored by 3 with their implied team total of 25. And Washington has an implied total of 22. When we were doing our show notes this week, Andy Dalton was someone we both like. But the more I dug into it, I kind of liked Kirk Cousins more than I liked Andy Dalton. So Jim's going to argue the Andy Dalton side this week, and I'll take on the Kirk Cousins side.
Yeah, and I think that this is interesting because I do like Kirk Cousins too. This isn't to say that I dislike him. It's more to say that I think that Andy Dalton is in a really good spot. You know, I think that I do get a bit nervous about playing quarterbacks in London, but it seems as if looking historically, as if the favored teams have performed better. The Bengals in this one, 3-point favorites, gives them an implied team total of 25 at this point, which has actually been moving up. It was 24.75 earlier this week. And the thing about this, too, is you look at Washington, they could potentially be without Josh Norman. He left that Detroit game early last week. And if he's not out there, I know that Washington's pass defense has been playing better, but even when you have Norman out there, they rank 24th against the pass this year based on number five metrics, and they've had their good games. They're definitely better than they were earlier in the season, but if you take Norman out of the equation, AJ Green could do some stupid things. I mean, in the most grotesquely positive sense, he could go silly out there, and that's again going to benefit Andy Dalton. The other thing about Andy Dalton here is that he gets Tyler Eifert back in a more fuller sense. If we look back to last year, there was no pass catcher who had at least 70 targets, who was more efficient, who helped his quarterbacks more based on number fires metrics than Tyler Eifert. He had 74 targets, and he was clearly the number one pass catcher in the entire league from an efficiency perspective. So getting him back actually makes Andy Dalton a better fantasy asset. So I think that you look back to what happened last week where Dalton really didn't have to throw in the second half because he had built the lead. We could see stuff like that, maybe not this week because Washington is a good team, but the Bengals have the potential to be a solid offense going forward now that Tyler Eifert is back. And Dalton wasn't bad without Eifert. He was 10th in overall efficiency, 8th in success rate. He was a good quarterback, but I just based on getting Eifert back, I would expect him to get better as the season goes along. So that's why I'm on Team Dalton, Sal. But I think that, you know, that Team Kirk has a lot of merit to it as well.
You know, this is a game where I like both quarterbacks. I just have a slight edge towards Kirk
Cousins. For sure.
I mean, Andy Dalton has been on an absolute tear this past 3 weeks. He's been a top 9 fantasy quarterback in 3 straight games, and he's averaged 21.4 fantasy points during that span. Like, I see both of those streaks continuing this week against Washington. But when we look at the other side of the coin here, though, Cincinnati quarterback finishes allowed this year. QB 18, QB 11, QB 1, QB 30, QB 12, QB 5, QB 8. You add that all up, that's no 5 top 12 fantasy quarterback finishes allowed. They're giving up 19.4 fantasy points per game. Kirk Cousins, while he only has 2 top 12 finishes this year, he has scored 17 or more fantasy points in 5 of his 7 games. Cincinnati has given up 2 or more touchdowns in 4 of their 7 games. The only quarterback to have, like, a bad game against the Cincinnati defense was Ryan Tannehill. And they allowed Trevor Siemian to be the overall fantasy QB1 back in Week 3 when he scored almost 29 fantasy points. And they just allowed the first top 12 fantasy finish to a quarterback who did not start a game this year in Kevin Hogan, thanks to his 104 rushing yards and one rushing touchdown game. So there's a lot to love for Kirk Cousins going up against this defense. One extra stat I will throw out to you comes courtesy of Jason Shandell and the Draft Day Consultants DFS newsletter, which I edit each week. He's just talking about like Washington in the red zone. And he said how Washington is one of the league's most pass-heaviest teams, and they rank 8th in pass-to-run ratio. And that also is in the red zone, where they rank 8th in red zone pass-to-run ratio and 5th on snaps inside the 10-yard line. So when an offense is moving the chains and they're getting a lot of scoring opportunities, you know, you can easily transfer that to the quarterback has extra opportunities in the red zone to score passing touchdowns, which is something I like for Kirk Cousins to do this week. And I know there was also some talk where Matt Jones popped up on the injury report, and Jordan Reed is currently in the process of trying to get cleared to make it to this game, because he's been without Reed for the past 2 games, I believe. So if you add Jordan Reed, take out Matt Jones, perhaps maybe Chris Thompson becomes a starting running back, you get some Rob Kelly. I think if just in general, if Matt Jones doesn't play, it would just lead to Washington wanting to throw more. So that's one of the reasons I like Kirk Cousins this week.
Yeah, and I think that's all solid. Those are all solid reasons, and they're why I like Kirk too. And I think that the passing volume for him is very appealing, especially like you mentioned with Matt Jones being dinged up, potentially getting Jordan Reed back. They are a largely healthy team once they get Jordan Reed back, in the passing game at least. So it makes sense. And I think that Kirk's in a really good spot. And if Jason Shandell's on board too, Jason Shandell's a smart dude. I can't disagree with that. So that does bolster Team Kirk. But I'll stick with hashtag Team Dalton for this week and see how it shakes out.
Right. Hopefully this is just a good game to watch with lots of high scoring.
Absolutely.
Both quarterbacks doing well. We'll find out next week who wins this quarterback streaming debate. And whoever does win becomes the fantasy host for life. And would be known as the quarterback streaming grand poobah of the QB2 Experience podcast. So we got that. We got something on the line.
We should get like an Alex Smith cake or something.
Oh, man. I don't know if I could eat that. I would just like
that's
stare.
True. I'd let it rot. I'd just let it rot in glory.
All right. So those are our top 4 streamers, I guess, if you include both from that game. We'll move now on to the next segment of this podcast, which is our clipboard holder of the week. Quarterback, we recommend you either bench outright or have second thoughts to start, depending on who your other options are. This is going to be Philip Rivers at the Denver Broncos. I feel like this is almost like deja vu, because we recommended sitting Philip Rivers against the Broncos before. But looking at the schedules, like a lot of repeat matchups in very close proximity of each other. I know that this is the second time these two teams are playing within a few weeks. New England and Buffalo are playing again against each other. So I'm not sure if that's the schedule makers just trying to get those games out of the way, or they just didn't realize it, because you feel like you might want to have a second rivalry a little bit more time in between. But no, I don't make schedules, so I'll digress. Looking at this game, the over-under is at 43.5. San Diego's implied team total is 19.25, which is actually a quarter of a point less than it was yesterday when I was doing my research. They added a 19.5 implied team total. So it looks like the line is going down for them. Denver now went from 4.5 to 5-point favorites. We got a little bit of wind factor to factor in, 9 miles per hour currently. We know quarterbacks facing Denver is usually a losing proposition. They've only allowed one top 12 fantasy quarterback finish to the quarterback position. That was Cam Newton all the way back in week 1, who was the quarterback 10. Since that, these are the quarterback finishes Denver has allowed: QB 28, QB 25, QB 23, QB 19, QB 23, QB 29. That is not very good, Jim, is it?
No, not really. And that Cam Newton top 10 finish included a rushing touchdown. And the other guy you mentioned there that was QB 18, I believe, was Matt Ryan. And he's been the best fantasy quarterback in the league this year. And I love Philip Rivers. I am a huge Philip Rivers fan. But to expect him just to, you know, hit the ceiling against a team like Denver is pretty unrealistic. You know, the line isn't good. That implied team total is the second lowest in the entire week. The only one lower right now is the Chicago Bears, led by the fearless Jay Cutler in his return. So that kind of shows the company that the Chargers are in for this week. And looking at Phillip Rivers, he did play well against Denver the first time around. And I think that, you know, it didn't really show up in his fantasy stats because the touchdowns didn't fall that way. He did play well, but it's the second time facing a divisional opponent. And like you said, Sal, just a few weeks. And we always want to be aware of when a team is facing an opposing defense for a second time, specifically when that quarterback is a quarterback who relies upon efficiency. And Phillip Rivers is one of the most efficient quarterbacks of the past decade, so he definitely qualifies there. So I have a lot of reservations about using him. If we're talking about those, you know, the three streamers we discussed before, or the four, I should say, I would use all of them over Phillip Rivers this week. If you have two of those guys, I'd be totally fine sitting Phillip Rivers this week because that matchup, for me at least, is pretty much as bad as it can possibly be.
Yeah, and just a little bit of a foreshadowing is that I would probably start all the quarterbacks we recommend in our rapid fire section coming up over Phillip Rivers as well. You mentioned Phillip Rivers had an okay game. I mean, he did have almost 200 passing yards and a touchdown, but only 11 fantasy points. Cam Newton is the only quarterback who scored over 15 fantasy points against these Denver Broncos this year. Matt Ryan almost reached that mark at 14.98, but other than that, no, Andrew Luck scored just over 10. Andy Dalton scored just over 10. Winston and Rivers each just scored barely over 11. Then Brock Osweiler last week scored less than 5 fantasy points against this defense. No quarterback has thrown over one touchdown against Denver this year. No, we have Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, Matt Ryan, Phillip Rivers have each had one, and then Dalton, Winston, and Osweiler had 0 touchdowns. Cam Newton's combined 2 touchdowns, 1 through the air, 1 through the ground, is the most they've allowed this year. The highest passing outage they've allowed is 267 yards to Matt Ryan. 5 quarterbacks have thrown for under 200 yards against them. And Rivers has scored under 15 fantasy points in 4 of his 7 games this year, and I expect that streak to continue this week.
Yeah, I would not be shocked at all. I mean, just kind of, you don't expect teams to put up a lot of points against Denver. I know that San Diego's offense has been fine, but just, you know, you're banking on an irregularity, which is not something that you want to do in any form of football, season long or DFS.
You know, like in Rivers, no, he threw 170 yards and a touchdown against Denver in San Diego. This game is in Denver this week. So just another X to mark off next to his name. All right, so that's a quick clipboard holder segment of the week. Now we'll move into our rapid fire section. Leading things off is our old boy, Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
We've come a long way since week one. During the darkest timeline of Tyrod Taylor owners, it was bad.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's worth noting, when discussing Phillip Rivers, we mentioned that this was the second time facing a divisional opponent. And Sal, you said that this is the second time Buffalo is facing New England. But the difference between Tyrod and Phillip for me is that Tyrod is not dependent on efficiency. I did a study last year on, you know, whether or not it was true that quarterbacks do worse against a divisional foe the second time they see them in a season. And for some quarterbacks, it was true. And if you look at those quarterbacks for which it was true, the ones who struggled, they were all higher efficiency quarterbacks, guys like Aaron Rodgers, guys like Peyton Manning back in the day, you know, these really good quarterbacks, and Phillip Rivers is in that group. They struggled more the second time around. But when you look at Matthew Stafford, you know, guys who aren't really dependent on efficiency, they're more volume people, they were fine. And I think that Tyrod is, while he's an efficient passer, he does benefit from additional volume. And if we're looking at New England, this is a game where Buffalo should be forced to pass the ball quite a bit, which is never really the case for Tyrod. He doesn't get the benefit of volume hardly ever. And the Patriots are 15th against the pass based on Number Fire's metrics. Negative game script, what that means is that negative game script is not as bad of a thing for Tyrod because they're not really capable of shutting him down in those situations. And if we look at their pass rush, I'm having trouble wondering why they traded Chandler Jones. They're 29th in sack net expected points per dropback based on NumberFire's metrics. And they were in the top five last year when they had Chandler Jones. They have gone from top five to bottom five in the course of the season, which further bolsters Tyrod's resume here. And they've allowed Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton to have respectable fantasy games against them. And like you said, Sal, Landry Jones last week, too, was, I think, QB 18. Like, you can do things against this New England defense. And I'm not superbly confident in Tyrod, but I think that he's still in a really good spot this week.
Yeah, I like to call this one the Alex Smith blue light special, a quarterback in negative game script.
Yes.
Where you actually like it because it gives him a chance to basically play catch up after the other team has gotten out to a big lead. You know, the Patriots are currently 6.5 point favorites in a game that has a 47-point over under. And even though Buffalo's got 20.25 implied team total, so just close to 3 touchdowns. Quarterback finishes allowed by New England this year. They've allowed 4 top 14 finishes. The only quarterback to have a bad game against this New England Patriots defense, which is kind of a running theme, is, no, our good friend Brock Osweiler. He's the only quarterback to not finish as a top 20 fantasy quarterback against the Patriots. Every other quarterback to face the Patriots this year has scored at least 13 fantasy points. And if you exclude Landry Jones from that list, every quarterback not named Brock Osweiler or Landry Jones has scored at least 16 fantasy points. If you add the Charlie White and Cody Kessler numbers, where while Kessler was injured early in that game, every quarterback not named Brock Osweiler has thrown for at least 240 yards. One thing we do like about Tyrod Taylor is his ability to get points on the ground. 4 quarterbacks have ran for 13 or more yards against the Patriots this year. If we go back to that Week 4 game, Tyrod finished as the fantasy quarterback 14, scoring close to 17 fantasy points. We mentioned earlier how week one was the disaster zone for Tyrod Taylor, and you know, that game, in hindsight, when we looked at it after the fact, a lot had to do with just the wind conditions. We don't have to worry about that one. Currently, NumberFire has it at 3 miles per hour projected. And so basically, since week two, Tyrod has finished as a QB4, QB12, QB14, QB15, QB12, and QB3, and has been averaging 19.57 fantasy points per game, which is just close to what the Patriots are allowing. The Patriots are allowing 16.7 fantasy points per game this year to the quarterback position. You add that all up, and this is a potential Tyrod Taylor. I would say he has potential to be like a low-end QB1 this week, especially when you factor in the 6 teams on a bye.
Man, when you were reading off those weekly finishes for Tyrod, I got a big smile on my face. It's so nice to have faith in Tyrod again. It's such a good feeling. I know, he makes the world more fun.
It's great when Tyrod Taylor is playing at a decent level of football.
Yeah.
Whether he's winning games in real life, but he's been providing fantasy points for us fake footballers out there.
And I say they let him play running back too with Shady Hurt. Just give Tyrod the ball, let him do what he wants, and go from there.
I would have no objections to that whatsoever. All right, so on the let's move on to our next rapid fire quarterback. This one's been kind of a yo-yo out in New York Jets land. First, we had Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was in bench for Geno Smith, who's in Tours ACL. Oh. So now we're back to Ryan Fitzpatrick going up against a team we definitely love to pick on when it comes to quarterback streaming in the Cleveland Browns. When I checked out yesterday, this game did not have a line yet, but looks like it does now. So we're looking at a game with a 43.5 over-under. The Jets are favored by 3.5 with an implied team total of 23.5 on the road in Cleveland with only 2 mile per hour win projection, which is very, very nice. Like I said, we like to pick on Cleveland. These are the finishes they have allowed this year. QB11, QB19, QB10, QB14, QB2, QB4, QB7. So basically every quarterback that has faced the Cleveland Browns this year has a floor of a QB2 when you talk about 10-team 2-QB leagues. And they are allowing the second most fantasy points per game at a rate of 21.3. So how are you feeling about Fitzpatrick's chances this week, Jim?
So I've mentioned before that I grew up a Jets fan, and I may or may not have lingering feelings of that. So I'm never going to feel great about Ryan Fitzpatrick after what he's done to start this year. And I'm a minor Geno Smith truther, so just the emotional trauma of the past week is also potentially clouding my judgment. But, you know, everything you went through, Sal, is correct. Facing the Browns, they're 27th against the pass based on number of fires metrics. The Jets implied team total, not great considering they're facing the Browns, but it's good enough where Fitzmagic can be, you know, a solid QB2 type guy. And like you said, the floor of a QB19 is really nice, and we've seen that Joe Flacco this year is maybe not quite as bad as Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's very close. He is in that realm. So I think that it lines up well for Fitzpatrick. He has Brandon Marshall. If he can just lean on B. Marsh, go from there, I think he'll be fine. I think that the floor here for Fitzpatrick is very good. I'm not sure about upside because the Jets seem to want to pound Matt Forte when they have a lead to kind of, you know, handicap Fitzpatrick a little bit. But I think that as from a floor standpoint, I think that Fitzpatrick is in a really good spot this week.
Okay, so I could basically just say that Ryan Tannehill scored almost 19 fantasy points against Cleveland this year and just end the podcast.
Right.
And I don't think anybody would argue. They're like, right. that's a fair point. Good show, guys.
I'm convinced.
On to week 9. But, I mean, you mentioned you don't have a whole lot of faith in Ryan Fitzpatrick, which I can't blame you because neither does his organization.
No,
he was saying how he's pissed off at the coaches, the owners, the managers. Nobody believes in him anymore. So this is me going off into my own path where I can basically envision a scenario where Ryan Fitzpatrick goes in clear DGAF mode. His feelings are hurt. He's pissed off. He will force throws without a single care in the world because he knows it's the end of the line for him in New York. And I could even see him like just throwing a career high amount of passes. And I looked it up, and he's thrown 58 passes in a game twice. One happened last year against the Rams. So it's like I might not have any logic or facts or sound reasoning behind this, but I can just see Ryan Fitzpatrick going out like he wakes up, drinks his morning coffee, just grumpy as hell. He's like, I honestly don't care that I'm here anymore. Nobody wants me here. So I'm just going to throw like a 90-yard bomb to Robbie Anderson and see what happens against this Browns defense.
It just a disheveled beard, you know, the full 9 yards. Did you see what Todd Bowles, their coach, said about Fitzpatrick after, I think it was a Monday press conference?
I feel like I remember, but I'll let you do it because you actually know what he said.
Yeah, so like they were talking to him, and Fitzpatrick had these quotes about how he was angry, the organization didn't trust him. And they asked Coach Bowles what he thought about that. He's like, well, if he's ticked off, maybe he'll stop throwing interceptions. And I was like, oh, what? Like, see, it was one of the best comments I've ever seen from a press conference. And that just made me love Todd Bowles even more. I love him because he looks like a character from The Wire named Bunny Colvin. So I love him to begin with. But, like, that just pushed him to a whole new level for me.
See, but then I could just imagine Ryan Fitzpatrick hearing those, like, oh, yeah, I'll just throw even more interceptions. Right. I just don't care anymore. Give me two footballs, I'll throw them at the same time to two DBs, and we'll just end this game right now.
Absolutely.
I don't know why I say if he's lucky. I mean, I guess he just finds himself in a situation where his backups are Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg. So he pretty much has to start the rest of the year unless, you know, New York Jets decide that they have a chance of winning and trade for Tony Romo, which will never happen. But it should be the Ryan Fitzpatrick show for the rest of the year, I'd imagine.
Geno on one knee. Let's do it.
I would watch that. But
I would too, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
I'll throw out some stats so that I don't sound like a complete loon when it comes to this recommendation. Fitzpatrick scored 15 or more fantasy points in 3 games this year. I mentioned the quarterback finishes earlier this year that Cleveland has allowed. But if we look at the 2 games where they did not allow a top 12 finish, that was to Joe Flacco in week two. He still scored 16 fantasy points and was just 3 fantasy points away from being the quarterback 12 that week. And then Kirk Cousins was the other quarterback who didn't finish as a top 12, but he scored over 17, and it was less than half a point away from being a top 12 quarterback. So this Cleveland defense is just a few points away from allowing a top 12 quarterback finish in every week this season. And that gives me reason to want to start Ryan Fitzpatrick. Since he was benched in real life, a lot of 2QBers probably dropped him, picked up Geno Smith, so he might be lingering on the waiver wire. I think most waivers are done by this time, but I know some leagues still do Wednesday morning, which was this morning, actually, so I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't think anybody does waivers on Thursday mornings, but if for some reason Ryan Fitzpatrick is still on the waiver wire and you're hesitant to start him, this would be the week you'd want to start him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the DGAF narrative, though, was the most convincing aspect for me, at least.
I mean, it's just like one of those weeks where you don't know if you're watching the NFL or you're watching The Young and the Restless.
Right.
Ryan Fitzpatrick all pissed off and his feelings are hurt. And then you have Jay Cutler, who was asked if his coach should have faith in him. Or And he's just like, well, he has no choice.
Such a good answer. That was such a Cutler answer.
Exactly.
Amazing.
That's basically like the most Jay Cutler answer you could ever get.
It's been a great week for press conferences, just overall. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point where people just don't care what they say anymore. Like, they just want to just be themselves and say the truth. There's no reason to hide it anymore and be a corporate figurehead. The Peyton Manning press conference days are over.
Yes, for sure. Hopefully.
Hopefully. All right, so that brings us on to our next rapid-fire recommendation of the week. You might hear a little bit of a sigh, heavy sigh in my voice as I get to this name, and this is a situation we've been in before. Brock Osweiler.
Boom, boom, boom.
I went on a little bit of a rant a few weeks ago when we had Brock Osweiler going up against the Indianapolis Colts, where I was trying to make a case for a bad quarterback in a good matchup. And we're here again because Brock Osweiler has done nothing to disprove that he has been a bad quarterback this year. And this time the matchup is even better against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, this isn't a good matchup. This is literally the best scenario a quarterback could possibly be in. Okay, so let's go through like the things here. He is at home. That's great. Houston is favored. That's great. That's what we're looking for here. You know, it's that we can work with this. You know, we're chugging along. The implied team total 23.75. Usually the target point is 24. So I'll take 23.75, a decent over under. He is facing the worst pass defense in the entire league based on number of fires metrics. There is no team worse than the Lions so far this year. That team is missing the best piece of its secondary. Darius Slay did not practice Wednesday. He left Sunday's game early. It seems as if he is likely to not play this week. That defense has allowed 5 top 7 quarterbacks this year, and they're in a dome. Like, they have a retractable roof in Houston. Literally every check mark you could possibly have is in Brock Osweiler's favor. If he can't do it this week, Sal, I don't know when he will, if he will.
And, like, he should be able to do it.
Right.
Like, we've seen basically almost every quarterback have a good game against this defense. You mentioned they've allowed 4 top 5 finishes. You tack in another QB8 finish and a QB13 finish. That QB13 finish came from Carson Wentz, who was 0.56 fantasy points away from being the QB12 that week. Marcus Mariota was QB18, but he still scored 16 points that week and was about 3 points from being QB12. So you're looking at a floor of QB18, but really that number doesn't matter a lot. You're looking at the fantasy points. You're looking at a floor of 16 fantasy points. I would close my eyes and just start whatever quarterback was playing if I knew I was guaranteed 16 fantasy points out of them. But, like, we can just keep going on and on. Detroit's allowing the most fantasy points per game at 23.8. We mentioned earlier how bad Indianapolis has been at stopping defenses. I'm not stopping defenses. Stopping quarterbacks. Now, Brock Osweiler had a good game against them. And I mentioned how Indy was allowing 67.7% of passes to be completed. Well, Detroit is allowing 74.2%. percent of passes, and last week it was about 71 when I mentioned this stat. Still, quarterbacks to face Detroit are completing 75% of their passes. Like, that is clear and above the most in the league. They've allowed the fifth most completions, 181, on the 12th most attempts at 244. I mean, you just look at that number. 181 pass attempts have been completed out of possible 244 attempts. Like, that is crazy. And you mentioned basically their best defender could be out this week.
Yeah. So I guess my question then is, if Brock doesn't get it done, are we talking about Tom Savage as a desperation play after their bye next week?
I mean, I've been banging the Tom Savage drum for like the past 3 or 4 weeks, because I just imagine at some point this team is going to be frustrated with Brock Osweiler and that they're going to want to bench him. I know last year they had a little bit of a quarterback controversy to start the year with Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer, but then we also saw injuries took a toll, where these were the quarterbacks that started for Houston last year. Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, TJ Yates, Brandon Whedon.
Oof.
Now we're at Brock Osweiler. Is Tom Savage really that far off of all of his quarterbacks we mentioned? So, like, yeah, long-term view, I feel like if you do own Brock Osweiler in two quarterback league, one, I'm sorry. Two, you are very lucky that he's playing the Detroit Lions this week, because you can start him. Three, you might want to consider handcuffing him with Tom Savage, or trading him away for whatever you can get, and then picking up Tom Savage and getting a little bit of the best of both worlds. But now, going back to this matchup, Detroit's allowed two or more passing touchdowns in six of their seven games. The only game they didn't allow two passing touchdowns, which was last week, and Kirk Cousins ran and threw a touchdown. So he still had two touchdowns in every game they've allowed. They've allowed four quarterbacks to throw 300 or more yards. They're allowing the 10th most passing yards at 284.3. They're allowing the most passing touchdowns per game at 2.6. They're 18-3 touchdown to interception ratio this year. Those 18 touchdowns are tied with Cleveland for the most allowed. So if you just look at the averages, you would have a quarterback line of a completion rate of 75% for 284 yards and almost three touchdowns, 2.6 touchdowns, and they've only allowed three interceptions. So you don't really have to worry about that. If you, again, you were telling me your quarterback is going to throw for 280 yards and throw for two touchdowns, I'd be happy with that. I'd have absolutely no problem with that. There is some good about Brock Osweiler. I don't want to just, like, beat up on this guy who I've never met in my life before. But he does have three QB16 finishes this year.
Yeah.
And no, he's thrown two touchdowns in three of his games. Does have a passing high of 269 yards. And if you were to look at the quarterback points per game finish this year, QB16 is just around 16.7 fantasy points. So there is some good, but there is a lot of bad. You know, he has an 8-8 touchdown interception ratio. He's completing only 58.2% of his passes. He's had four games where he's been the QB25 or worse, which is not great. So, again, it all comes down to a bad quarterback in a good matchup. And I've done a lot worse things in my life than stream a bad quarterback in a good matchup, especially a quarterback as bad as Brock Osweiler. I'm not sure how many people out there know about this one chip challenge. Have you heard of this, Jim?
One chip?
The one chip challenge.
No.
So there's this company. It's called Pocky. They spell it P-A-Q-U-I, and they say on the box that it sounds like hockey, so Pocky Hockey. And there's this box. It looks like a casket grave. It's got the Grim Reaper on it, and they call it Inside One Deadly Chip. There's only one chip in this box, and it costs $4.98 Canadian. So I think that's like 5 cents American. So you can probably buy 20 of them for the cost that I got one. And so I did this yesterday. And it says right in front of the box, made with the hottest pepper in the world.
Oh, no.
So you look at the back of the ingredients.
And oh, Sal, no.
Something called a Carolina Reaper pepper, ghost pepper, and then chipotle pepper powder. So basically, it's called the One Chip Challenge, where they challenge you to eat this one chip in this box. And it says, crazy hot, not for the faint of heart. If the heat is too much, try drinking milk or eating ice cream. Don't eat if you're sensitive to spicy foods, have a medical condition. And they recommend you wash your hands immediately after touching this chip. So just to kind of lay the story down for you. So I like spicy food. I like to pretend that I can do well with extremely spicy food, but I can't. I'm a big baby when it comes to that. But still, in my head, I'm like, I'm going to try this chip. And I watched videos online where people did this challenge and they're crying or they're screaming or they're like, you see people just drinking like a gallon of milk to get to chug the heat. So I open this box and it tells you how to eat it and gives you all these instructions. And I carefully take out the chip out of the plastic wrapper and I take like the tiniest bite you can imagine, like
oh,
the
no.
size of a baby's pinky finger, because I knew I couldn't eat this whole chip. And my face goes red, my lips are numb, my body is tingling, I just feel the heat everywhere for like a good 45 minutes, and I only ate like a bite, like half of a bite really. I can't even imagine people that ate this whole chip, how they were feeling afterwards. Like, I would probably have had to have gone to the hospital if I ate this whole thing.
Wait, so what did you do with the rest of the chip?
I just threw it out. I just got rid of it.
So the question then is, would you rather start Brock Osweiler or eat the whole chip?
And the answer should be start Brock Osweiler.
Okay. I don't think I could even do that. You know, you have more courage in that department than I do. So I tip my hat to you, even if it was just a small bite. But I guess my experience with spice is that you need to just go all out, you know, like rip the Band-Aid off. Just plunge right on in, see what happens. Like if you ever have had like the blazing wings of Buffalo Wild Wings, you eat those, then you sweat out your head for a couple of hours, and then you eventually realize they're as hot going out as they are coming in, and you just kind of are miserable for a while, but you get it over with at least.
I agree with you there, but I would say I would make the exception for this chip, because when I went to the self-checkout aisle to pay for it, the cashier at the end of the line is like, good luck eating that. My boyfriend did that last week, and he went to the hospital. Like, these chips have been recalled off the shelf because of how much pain they have caused people. It's crazy. Like, I would say if you like spice and you think you can handle it, you can't. But Godspeed to you if you can eat the whole chip.
I can't do that. So I mean, I'm just going to take the L there.
So I was thinking, because, this chip, it's got the One Chip Challenge hashtag. I think let's do our own challenge this week. We'll call it the Brock Osweiler Challenge. No. Tweet us, tweet Jim, Jim S-A-N-N-E-S, or tweet me to QBFFB, or you can tweet the 2QB's account, TWQBS. Tweet us a screenshot of your roster if you're starting Brock Osweiler, and use the hashtag BrockOzChallenge. And we will basically create one large online therapy group.
Oh, man.
In the off chance that Brock Osweiler just face plants this week.
And we'll know who to congratulate when he's quarterback one, right?
Exactly.
The quarterback one.
We'll send a shout out to Pocky Chips. Like, this is all your fault.
And if you decide not to use Brock, I think that you should have to eat the chip.
Ooh.
That should be the alternative.
I
think I'm setting myself up to force myself to eat it, and I don't want to go down that road, so I rescind all previous comments.
All right, I think that's enough Brock Osweiler talk for this week. We went kind of overboard. We have one more quarterback left. This is a kind of our desperation play, because this week we have six teams on a bye. So if you're looking for a quarterback to plug in from the waiver wire, it would be Kevin Hogan if he's named the starter for the Cleveland Browns. There have been reports that Josh McCown is on his way to starting this week for the Browns. And I can see scenarios where Josh McCown has been lingering on the waiver wires in two quarterback leagues since his injury. Or you've just been holding him on your roster on the bench for this whole time. Either way, both of these quarterbacks are in play as a desperation start. If Cody Kessler is out because he's in the concussion protocol, the Cleveland Browns are playing the New York Jets this year, who have allowed QB finishes of QB 14, QB 5, QB 18, QB 5, QB 3, and then the last 2 weeks, not that great, QB 19, QB 20. But they are allowing the 10th most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks at a rate of 18.1. We've seen Kevin Hogan have a little bit of rushing ability, having ran for 100 yards on his score last week. So if he were to start, the Jets did allow Tyrod Taylor to run for 25 yards this week. They allowed five quarterbacks to run for 15 or more yards last year. But if Josh McCown is starting, we've seen him put up fantasy points as a Cleveland Brown. He had almost 15 points in his one game this year. He scored 18 or more fantasy points in four of his games last year. Our desperation plays haven't been too great. Now, Drew Stanton had 12-ish fantasy points, and Landry Jones had just slightly over 13. So these are quarterbacks we kind of think have the potential to be like a top 20, 15 fantasy points-ish. But I think I would feel more confident in Josh McCown's ability over Kevin Hogan's. How do you feel about this one, Jim?
Yeah, I think that, given that McCown practiced in full on Wednesday, I think that he's a really nice play. I would have no objections to him. I might go him over Fitzpatrick, to be honest, which is probably stupid. But like if this had been Cody Kessler without the concussion, with full practice this week, if that had been him starting, I would have used him over Fitzpatrick without hesitation. So that's like kind of my thoughts on those two guys. I think that McCown is in that same area. So they have a pretty good situation. The Jets' pass defense has been a lot better the past 2 weeks. Seems like Darrelle Revis is kind of back, getting there at least. So at the same time, though, I think that they're good enough. They have enough weapons to do some damage. So, yeah, I agree. I think that if you're in a spot where you need to start Josh McCown, you could absolutely do a whole lot worse than him.
Right, and we know Corey Coleman is close to returning. He's not returning this week, but I know he's been positive reports, and when you have six teams on a bye in a two quarterback league, this is the time of the year where the trade winds are swirling, where teams are trying to trade for quarterbacks as a 1 week bye replacement because the waiver wire is usually bare. I think Josh McCown is someone you'd be able to acquire on the cheap. It shouldn't cost you too much, and they got the Jets this week, Dallas next week, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Giants, Cincinnati, Buffalo, San Diego to end out the year. So not only might you be trading for a QB2 streamer this week, but you could be trading for a potential rest of season quarterback too. So I would throw out those lowball offers out there for Josh McCown.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think that, whether it's him or Kessler rest of the season, they're both in really good spots because that team, like you said, with Corey Coleman back, they'd have Pryor, Coleman, Barnage. That's not a bad set of receivers. So, yeah, I'd be doing the exact same thing that you mentioned, trying to potentially buy low now while you still can and get a piece of that situation.
Perfect. So that does it for this week's edition of the QB2 Experience podcast. So just quickly run down our streaming recommendation. We like Jameson Winston and Alex Smith. We both do like Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins. I think Jim is more on the Dalton side. I'm more of the Cousins side there. Our rapid fire recommendations were Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brock Osweiler. We have our desperation streamer and who's ever starting for the Cleveland Browns, and quarterback we recommend you sit would be Philip Rivers this week. So that does it for this episode of the podcast. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Jim?
No, I think I'm excited to see how this week goes. I'm excited to see the responses for the Brock Oz Challenge. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that Washington-Cincinnati game goes, see who comes out on top in that one.
Perfect. As always, I'm Salvatore Stefanelli. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. You can find my work on the website that sponsors this podcast, which is 2QBs.com. Jim, why don't you let the audience out there know where they can find you, and then we'll close out the show.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Jim Sannes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S. And then all my work is up on numberfire.com.
Perfect. As always, Jim, it's a pleasure to chat QB streaming with you.
Same with you.
Perfect. We like each other. Yay.
Yeah.
Everybody out there listening, good luck this week and happy streaming.